after this tour de force through the Latvian history of sound, I want to introduce you to Raoul Mörchen. Raoul Mörchen is a musicologist, philosopher, and art historian from Cologne. And he will guide us through the halls of Cologne until tomorrow afternoon. So,
there isn't too much. Welcome, everyone. Good morning. There isn't too much to say at the very beginning, I guess. I just want to give you a brief overview of what the conference is about. I guess it's pretty traditional in having long lectures. They're called keynotes. Short lectures, they're just called lectures. There's coffee and there's talks afterwards, or conversations or discussions, round tables. In case, while listening to the lectures, there's any questions of yours, I'd ask you just to write them down or keep them in mind and ask them after the round tables and not raise them right after the lecture, so we just don't kind of lose our schedule. I think we're a bit behind already, aren't we? Okay. So, thank you very much, Kristaps, for this brief overview of the history of sound art in Latvia. And we're going to dig more into the history of that field and into certain aesthetic problems. I'm very happy that it's not only theorists here, but also artists. Actually, I think it's three theorists and four artists, so I think the ratio is pretty fair. And don't leave the stage. I think that's... Well, I guess that's you to start now. There isn't anything to say. So I'm very happy, as I said, like it's going to be a mix of theory, and hopefully there's a lot of sound to be heard and pictures to be seen. And we start with the lecture by Pekka de la Motava. Carsten introduced her already as the, we can say it, a key figure in musicology and art critique to make us understand what sound art is, and we might have a chance to talk about it later on. Please. Okay, I got it on my top.
Thank you for coming, and thank you for this invitation. I have a talk of normal lengths. Concerning the conditions of sound art. Sound art is a new art genre. Sound art as a new art genre participates in fine art as well as in music. This means that the traditional separation of arts of space and arts of time is no longer valid. Space and time have an inextricable relationship in our perception, as can be shown by psychological research. You see, easily to demonstrate by eye movements when regarding pictures or rooms. Any constitution of an object in our mind implies a temporal change of viewpoints, which allows the extraction of different invariant components. Looking into a space means that eyes move around. The temporal change of viewpoints normally takes place automatically. You can realize that it is automatic. If you try to stare at an object for a long time, perception becomes blurred and vague. Since the 20th century, everyday experience of space and time has become a source of artistic inspiration. Another condition which leads Another condition which led to sound art was the loss of representation in art in favor of pure construction. This meant a refusal of subjective emotional expression in music, already in the music of Claude Debussy, as well as a reduction of paintings adhering to the formal structure, often as an analogy to music, maybe Paul Klee, and moreover the increasing importance of the idea of art as a process, already happening shows it, and more the inclusion of the visitor into a setting, environmental art, since the 1960s. The term sound art can have a broader sense, also referring to electroacoustical works. I use the term in its narrower sense, meaning sound installation, where sound sources are installed and the visitors are allowed to walk around. The full range of the new aesthetic implications of sound art cannot be developed in the frame of one lecture. Therefore, only two specific aspects should be discussed: the experience of space and the feeling of presence in a space. Equally, an extensive definition of the concept of space seems impossible because philosophical systems have been based on assumption of space and time for centuries. Bearing this in mind, here the concept of space is restricted to an anthropological sense. This means that human information processing of spatial cues is a focal point. Presence is a theoretical concept which gained scientific importance as technologies progressed, which allowed construction of virtual realities. Actually, some scientists restrict the notion of presence to digitally generated virtual realities, mainly if they are dealing with the question of whether mediated experience should seem unmediated, comparable to a natural environment. Also for video games, they intend this. Sound installations often use, but don't necessarily need, digital means. However, they are virtual in the sense that they create an artificial world. Contrary to digital virtual realities, their fictional character should be preserved. This means that the visitor within a sounding room experiences being in a place other than the one he is physically in. Sound installations provide the visitor with the feeling of being in a specific situation from which the artistic character should not be lost. This idea will be discussed later on. Spatial impressions during listenings. I bring now some examples. We believe that we see space. This is an everyday prejudice. The eye only opens the visual channel. It optimally assesses information about the qualities of objects as well as their intermediate distances and the distance to the observer. But we cannot see what is behind us. The ear, in contrast, is a good analyst of space qualities. It conveys information about the volume, emptiness or damping, as well as reverberating furnish. Sound can also be a directory that points to something. Everyday perception synthesizes acoustical and visual sensory cues into a multimodal perception. The architect Bernhard Leitner conceives sound as a material to transform rooms. Sometimes Leitner reveals its inner character. For a church, an acoustically vertical sound composition was constructed. Sound ascended up from one sound source at the bottom and another one descending from the cupola projected by a loudspeaker. The sound remained trapped in the cupola, supported by an electronically extended echo. The boundaries of the visual cupola were dissolved by acoustic means, with the intention to wrench open the space and to guide the gaze out into the universe. Multimodal perception took place where the acoustical cues were set above the visual cues. Moreover, the whole space with its volume and all of its features can be imagined in the reverberations of sound. As with other musicians, the composer Alain Lucier was aware that the perception of music is influenced by spatial cues, for example, space qualities mirrored in reverberations influence the development of overtones, the timbre, the clarity, or the density of sound. Lucier began to compose with architecture in 1969, convinced that every room has its own melody, hiding there until it is made audible. He wrote a text which described the situation of a speaker recording the text on a tape, played it back, recorded, played again. The text, I am sitting in a room, I am recording the sound of my speaking voice, and I am going to play it back into the room again and again until the resonant frequencies of the room reinforce themselves, so that any resemblance with perhaps the exception of rhythm is destroyed. This work is not a physical demonstration, even though it has a lot to do with the physical conditions. I believe that Lucier's proposals for other versions in real time, with other texts, or several speakers in different rooms, even in different languages, have never been realized. All of them can realize Lucier's intention to open the secret door to the sound situation that you experience in a room. A comparison of the work of Leitner with that one of Lucier's shows that sound installations have different aesthetic implications. The former transforms room with acoustical building material, the latter tries to reveal hidden but real aspects of the world. Sound installations sometimes can also be an illusion, but not like a trompe-l'oeil painting. Christina Kubisch instead intended only a shift of perception in some of her works, particularly in the series Consecutio Temporum. She provided historic rooms with black light and shaped some architectural features with fluorescent pigments. This also means that in such a dark room, the eye makes an effort to assess precisely distances. A multi-channel composition of murmuring quiet sounds drifted through the room. The sound intensifies the impression of being in another reality where the echoes of the past reverberate. Kubisch achieved an effect of defamiliarization which intensifies the perception of reality by breaking rooted perceptual habits. Defamiliarization by artistic means already has a long tradition. In the 1920s, it was used as an aesthetic principle by the Czech structuralists, or soon afterwards by Bertolt Brecht. In an interview, Kubisch explained, I am always concerned with making certain structures in space visible, also with revealing architectural contexts, and with bringing the viewer out of his normal view of seeing space. You enter a space and you are accustomed to estimating its height, breadth, or to consider the function. It has a window, it has a door. When you no longer see any of this, but other things instead, then you can't immediately come to terms with the room. That means to have to give up your habits, and then another form of perception ensues. Sound installations change everyday perception. They aim for the development of new forms of spatial sensitivity so that disregarded aspects of the environment are revealed. This This is also one aspect of the sound sculptures by Bill Fontana, who often relocated noise by field recording from one place to another in real time. In 1994, he broadcasted the sound from the sea from Normandy to 48 loudspeakers hidden in the facade of the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. His concept of this monument was as an island at the center of an immense circle of traffic. Fontana used the sound of the sea because it is white noise and has the psychoacoustic ability to mask other sounds. As such, he created the illusion that the cars were silent. Beyond these non-site-specific aspects of his work, he intends to dissolve the perception of the world from a closed mind view. He likes to overcome our semantic labeling of the environment, to overcome categorizing with words resulting in an oversimplification. In other words, he likes to overcome perception by the categories of our presumed knowledge. Fontana creates a perceptual tension between what we see and what we hear to provoke a new virtual image. His works ask the question of whether there are other possibilities regarding awareness of the world by heightening sensitivity for stimuli cues. The perceptual abilities of listening and viewing the space can mutually interact. I already mentioned that sound can be a directory for a visual focus. Rolf Julius used it for his music for the glance outside by using a paper with a little loudspeaker glued to a window. The sound drew the attention of the eyes to the open air. However, also visual cues can interfere with the acoustical information. In his complicated multi-channel sound installations on Quivillard, pupil of Alvin Lucier, distorted sometimes the locus of focus by using several moving antennas pointing, sometimes each separately, toward different locations in the room and didn't indicate the direction of the sound that the sound was coming from. The ear is more competent for a holistic impression of the volume of space, however the eye can better assess spatial directions and distances. Due to the latter's superiority, the acoustical orientation was distorted. Quivilla intended to show that inscrutable technological devices are unreliable. Presence, being there, and the loss of objecthood. According to a typical definition of presence, presence means the subjective feeling of existence within a given environment. Probably in 1967, the art historian Clement Greenberg was the first to use the term presence in an aesthetic sense on the occasion of an exhibition of contemporary sculpture. In the same year, the theoretician Michael Fried took it up for his article Art and Objecthood, a harsh critic of minimalist artists whom he classified as literalists, particularly Donald Judd and Robert Morris. He wrote, literalist sensibility is theatrical because it is concerned with the actual circumstances which the beholder encounters literalist works. Whereas in previous works, what is to be had from the work is located strictly within it, the experience of literalist art is of an object in a situation, one that virtually by definition includes the beholder. entire situation means exactly that, all of it, including, it seems, the beholder's body. Fried lamented that minimalists conceived their simple objects to be an integral part of an ambient space, changing with the distance and the angle of view of the beholder, and that these relationships exist only perceptually. He compared this integration of a variety of features together with a synthesis of different art genres, he mentioned John Cage, with a theatrical situation. Despite his negative assessment, many of Fried's ideas are still valid, including theatricality. Sound art brought about typical examples of the loss of objecthood. It is no coincidence that one of the first sound works was originated from one of the artists incriminated by Fried. In 1961, Robert Morris created a simple walnut box which contained a tape by which he presented the viewer a recording of the manufacturing sound lasting for 3.5 hours. John Cage should be deeply impressed. Also, Morris counter-argued that Fried had misunderstood the central points of new aesthetic thought, and he sent him a book that Fried had to read. The field of presence. It was a phenomenology of perception by Maurice Merleau-Ponty. The English translation was published in 1962. The relationship of Merleau-Ponty's philosophy on new aesthetic thought cannot be understood in the sense of cause and effect. Notice that the Morris box was exposed in 1961. However, Merleau-Ponty reinforced the new ideas, particularly the inclusion of the beholder or listener in an artwork, by his central assumption that any perception refers to a pre-logical knowledge which is given together with the body and the position of the body. Any perception refers to a system of experience in which my body and the phenomena are linked closely together. The phenomenological method entails describing phenomena as they appear and as they are lived by us in experience. Merleau-Ponty wrote, the body discovers meaning of relations in the sentient field and sees that they have meaning. Merleau-Ponty was deeply influenced by the Gestalt theory, as many minimalists also, and by the early ecological theories. In the case under consideration, his idea of the temporal spatial field of presence is important, in which a reciprocal relationship between observer and features of the environment exists. The terminus technicus for field of presence is a German word, Präsenzfeld, which Merleau-Ponty believed was a term of Edmund Husserl's, and he confused it with Husserl's Zeitfeld. Sound installations seem to be prototypical examples for such a field of presence. It doesn't matter if Lamont-Young was directly influenced by Merleau-Ponty's book or only through the omnipresent phenomenological ideas. His sound installation, Dream House, since 1962, created a situation which can be described as a presence field, however an alienated one compared with everyday experience. In this installation, an oscillating sound space with calculated standing sine waves develop modes of vibration which are changed by walking persons and forms a constantly changing pattern of tone tones. Through it, the feeling of a close relationship between the presence of one's own body and the sound was inevitable. However, the feeling of being there in the sense of Merleau-Ponty can become ineffective if someone's attention is lost, for example, if he is lying on the floor and meditating involving a clouding of consciousness. Lamont-Young approved of such an attitude towards his installation because he believed in Indian philosophy. The magic lighting of Marian Sarsela supported the shift of awareness. Important contributions to a new aesthetic thought originated in the 1960s from the concept artists who also emphasized the perceiver's role. Victor Berlin, a British conceptualist, created the term situational aesthetics in 1969. He assumed that only material signs are given by an artistic setting measurable by physical methods. However, their manifold relations and significations depend on perceptual operations of immediate enactment and interpretation. Berlin opened his article with the words, "Some recent art evolving through attention to the conditions under which objects are perceived and to the process by which aesthetic status is attributed to certain of these has tended to take its essential form in message, not in materials. Doubtless there are objective measurable cues, however it is the visitor's experience that matters." Berkin described as situational aesthetics, what Berkin described as situational aesthetics is partly equivalent with the aforementioned field of presence. He accentuated the autonomy of the beholder, the authority of the perceptual process, and the importance of the inner space. Visitors' active participation is integral to the art work, which cannot be described by object criteria. It is what is owing to the actions of the perceiver. It is easy to argue that this idea can be applied to traditional art as well as to contemporary art, because every artwork implies an encounter between viewer and an object. But in the case of traditional art, always a distance to the perceiver, indeed also for space, feeling music played on a stage, such a distance exists always. Contrary situational aspects of an installation, including the whole environment, produce a real experience of presence. The work itself is a state of affairs depending on the perception of a beholder. Today, presence is a buzzword in the context of virtual digital produced reality. There are a lot of psychological experiments to show the conditions which provide the sensory experience of being in a place another than the one the user is physically in. Financial support is guaranteed by the game and 3D industry as well as military institutions. The conditions which influence the impression of being there are sensory data, attention and orientation reaction respective to interaction in the new perceptual field, moreover cognitive and emotional processes. However, the immersion in a digital virtual space is thwarted by knowledge of myself as a body, which can maintain other spatial qualities other than the ones which are conveyed by the manipulated sensory data of viewing and hearing. Spatial qualities of the natural world are maintained as a result of habitual kinesthetic impressions or a postural bodily scheme. Until now, it has been difficult difficult to construct digital virtual spaces where someone feels totally immersed in the artificial here and now. Meanwhile, an interesting effect has been confirmed by several experiments which show that the impression of presence is strongly enhanced by sound, even if it is as unrealistic as music. Sound envelops the perceiver, hence it is a crucial factor for immersion in the virtual space. For me, these results challenge a comparison between the feeling of presence in a sound installation and one in a digital virtual reality. There is a huge difference, which should be mentioned first. A digital virtual space should evoke the impression of being unmediated, similar to a natural environment. In contrast, a sound installation should be recognized as an artistic work. The latter rarely totally diminishes the cognitive distance to what is shown. An exception was mentioned by the installation by Laurent Dillon. However, the different types of sound installations imply different intensities of cognitive distance or emotional involvement. A lot of sound installations are site-specific works. This means that they exist in a certain place, the characteristic features of which are revealed by the artistic interpretation. The aforementioned works of Leibniz, Kubisch, or Julius are site-specific. The sensory system of the visitor walking around continuously receives audiovisual information by a shift of direction and distance. The sound underscores some properties of the place which are not discovered at first glance, so that the visitor focuses his attention on them. Hence, he can surmount the imprecise, everyday rooted habits of space perception. Moreover, the visitor becomes aware of the lavish construction of the scenery as well of his own presence in it. Normally, this cognitive distance is accompanied by a bigger or stronger emotional involvement depending on the sound structure. This can be shown by the two rooms of Robin Menard, Outside In, Blue, and Silence, Blue. Both seem to be similar from a visual point of view because they are filled with blood blue light, which can provide a meditative atmosphere. One was a railway carriage, part of an artistic train project crossing through Germany. The other, a space in a museum in Pittsburgh. For the carriage, Minard used alienated modern music and field recordings, which changed from station to station. For the museum, he included 341 piezo loudspeakers to the window covered with blue plexiglass. He also played a mixture of sounds, of water sounds. The first installation managed in a carriage attracted attention to the new sound events of the different railway stations again and again. Such orientation reactions are mainly rooted in cognitive processes, but not at all, because the feeling of surprise arises together with the pleasure of hearing the new sound events. In the museum, perception also oscillated between distance and immersion. Normal listening to sound was possible without projecting the mind through the media setting to another state of consciousness. However, not without reason, the title of this installation was Silence Blue. It suggested a meditative atmosphere provided not only by the diffusion of blue light, but also by a soft, changing, iridescent sound texture. Contrary to the carriage installation, there were no illusion-breaking acoustic moments, the embodied perceiver could experience a shift, partly taking himself to be the concept of perception by which he had access to his inner space. Normally we do not tend to notice it because we are mainly interested in observing the exterior world. Nevertheless, humans are capable of self-awareness. It is a question of the mode of viewpoints. Sound installations which do not require continuous assessment of new information can enhance self-awareness. Nevertheless, a reference of what is perceived internally to the external situation is maintained. It is not a form of escapism. Therefore, self-awareness should not be confused with pseudo-religious mind expanding practices. The sound is a present phenomenon distinct from the external observations, which nevertheless require effective organizing of what is heard. Self-awareness means that the process of listening as such, the how and the what, is the center of attention. An indifferent impression of being there can arise if an individual is absorbed in the present moment, where the inner space unifies with the environment. Only a few studies and research describe this process meanwhile precisely. My remark on self-awareness, on the how and what of listening in a sound installation should initiate further reflections because terms such as inner space, meditation, or thoughtful disposition of the visitor are used by artists to describe the intention of the installation. It is not yet clear if these terms refer to a form of self-awareness. And a short summary. Any artwork takes place in our experience. However, the 20th century gave up the idea of objecthood. This means that the idea of an objective, autonomous existence of the artwork is given up in favor of the perceiver's participation by including him in the same space. Philosophical phenomenology, mainly that one of Merleau-Ponty, supported the new aesthetics showing that space and time are mental concepts inextricably linked with each other. The audience presence in an artistic temporal spatial field, the so-called field of presence, creates a feeling of being there, where a reciprocal relation of the perceiving subject with the objective settings constitutes art experience. Vielen Dank.